Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Mantra 8. Mantra 8 describes another aspect of the Ishvasya principle. If one is actually qualified, he must be able to see the Lord as a transcendental and eternal Supreme Person. The Lord is unembodied, which means that there is no difference between his soul and body. His senses are interchangeable, as it is confirmed in Brahma Samhita. At the request of the Acharyas, the Lord descends in his deity form, which is non different from his original spiritual form. Unfortunately, the materialists and the materialistic devotees cannot accommodate the fact that the Lord can be transcendental and immanent at the same time. So now, I'd like to read the footnote.
According to the Harper Collins Dictionary of Philosophy, page 120, the philosophy of theism in most interpretations is God is partly immanent in the universe and partly transcendent. In essence, this definition is the Vedic philosophy of the Supreme Person. As stated in Purusha Sutta, with 3/4 of himself the Purusha ascended. The other 1/4 was born here. From here and all sides he move toward the living and non-living. Again and again in the Vedic literatures, we find references to Tripad Vibhuti and Ekapad Vibhuti, the 3/4 of the Lord's splendor displayed as a spiritual world, and the 1/4 by which he pervades the material world, and the 1/4 by which he pervades the material world. While the material manifestation, Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, know that all these opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations are born from a part of my total expanded.
Because they oppose theism, the theories of deism, monism, pantheism, and dualism are actually atheism. Deism separates God completely from his material creation. Monism renders God heartless. Pantheism confines him to the material universe. And dualism divides creation against him, placing part of it in the hands of a rival. Even major religious traditions like Christianity are influenced by deism and dualism. Suhoja Swami, substance and shadow.
Thank you. So all these theories are partially right. Therefore, yes.
What does it mean, immanent?
Now we'll talk about this just now. So when we talk with these people, we should try to start from the point that they got correct and then try to build up. So they have some good points here, but all these theories are incomplete. So how are they incomplete? We'll go briefly with them. The reason why they're incomplete is again what we were talking the previous days. The Chit, Achit and Ishvara, these three tattvas, they actually comprise Sambandha, and they don't explain correctly the relationship between these three tattvas, between God and the material creation and the living entities. Like, for example, what is called deism here? Deism means that Krishna or God is completely transcendental and he doesn't have any access to this material world because this will contaminate him. God is perfect, the world is imperfect, that means he doesn't have any contact with this world. He doesn't come here, there is no such thing like avatars, it just doesn't exist.
What does he do?
Well, just exists, I guess, in his own realm. And the problem is that if you ask them what such people, they'll say God is a person, they'll agree, but if you ask them some details, how he looks like, if he has a form or name, they'll say he doesn't have name, no form, nobody has ever seen him, if you see him you'll die, and, like this.
Yes. But if he's a person, how come he doesn't have form?
That's the problem. They'll say he's a person, but when you ask more questions, it will you'll understand that he's. They actually don't have idea about personality, God's personality. They don't know, but they'll say sentimentally. They'll say he's a person. That's the problem. So, immanent and transcendental. Immanent will mean that he's. In some way, he's present inside the material world, in some of his features or some of his aspects are actually present here. And transcendental will mean that he's above, beyond this world, and he's not present at all. So theism means achinta bheda bheda tattva, means actually he's both immanent and transcendental. So the deists, they cannot make the connection. They'll take the Ishvara as the more prominent, the most prominent. God is prominent, and then they won't be able to explain the connection between Ishvara and Achit, these two aspects. So they just separate them. But we know from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains there that although he's transcendental and he's the master of all living entities and he's unborn. Ajo pisan ave yatma bhutanam ishvaro pisan prakritin svamadishtaya sambhavami atma maya. He comes regularly inside this universe, but he's protected by his internal potency, sambhavami atma maya. So there is no contradiction. He comes, but he maintains his perfect spiritual nature. He's not contaminated. So this point they cannot understand. So they have to separate the two. Or another example. Here we're talking about deism and then pantheism. That means the pantheists, they will take the Achit aspect as more prominent. Material energy, the creation. So this is God. The universe is God. They won't take it just as a manifestation of God's power. They won't appreciate it in this way. They'll just say, actually, this is what is the Lord, the universe. Yes.
So for them, God is not a person.
He's not a person. Yes. They will laugh if they see a Vaishnava worshipping the deity. Because what is this? God is the universe. Yes, Balaram.
Are these four connected to Sadarshan?
Yes, they will be more remote manifestation of the six philosophical systems. They will be manifested in the Western environment. Because here we're talking mostly about Western religious philosophy. But the origin of all this is in Sadarshan.
The people who are claiming that God is just
that God is just what?
Energy.
Energy, including pantheists. They could be. If this energy is, well, if they accept that this energy actually is the subtle form of the universe, because there are such people, they understand that actually everything is just energy, and this energy, when it's manifested in a gross form, it's the universe. But it might be manifested on a subtle level, then it's just the energy which sustains the universe. So yes, they could be also included, or they might be just Mayavadis. But they're all connected, because they all don't accept the personal aspect of Krishna. Dualism, what was this? Deism, pantheism, or some of them will accept the chit feature as very prominent, and they will worship many demigods. So they will exclude Ishvara. They will worship many living entities as gods. So this is another way that they will misunderstand this chit and Ishvara. That means they don't understand Sambandha Gyan. And they come with this wrong, or we can say they are just incomplete philosophies. They have some truth in them, but they are incomplete. And unless they don't come to the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna actually explains that he is, although he is the maintainer and he is everywhere, and he is the Lord of all living entities, he is not part of this material creation at the same time. Because he, as Bhagavan, he stands apart of all this. And until they don't understand this point, all their philosophies will be incomplete and imperfect. So, yes?
I have a question, bro. It says that the Lord is unembodied, which means there's no difference between his soul and the body.
Yeah.
So, is a jiva in the material world and in the spiritual world different from his body?
No. In the spiritual world, there's no difference. In the material world, there is. Because here we have a material body which is not the soul. But in the material world, then this is not there. The material body is not there. So the jiva is just like the Lord in this way, in this sense. That there is no difference. So the question was... Okay, the answer. Sorry, because I don't want to scream at him. And that's why. Okay, I'll repeat. So the answer was, in the material world, there is always this duality between the material body and the soul. But in the spiritual world, since the material body doesn't exist, then there is no difference between the living entity and his body, which is the same. There is no duality.
So in the spiritual world, is the living entity still the size of 1/10,000
Never heard about this. Maybe I don't know. I can only speculate on this.
As far as I remember, I said in the spiritual world, is the soul still 1/10,000th
the size of the tip of a hair. And here it is also mentioned dualism. Dualism means you actually you have Ishvara and the material world, Ishvara and Achit, and you make them you place them in a like contradictory positions. That means God is God, but this material world is created by someone else. It's not created by God. You have also this kind of people, or maybe it was created by God, but it is ruled by another person, by the evil one. So you have two tattvas. You have the good person, God, and then you have the evil one. It also shows a misunderstanding of Sambandha Gyan. The Lord fulfills the desires of all living beings according to their qualification. Still, the qualification itself is not sufficient. You want to read? a living being desires something, and the Lord supplies.
A living being desires something. The Lord supplies the object of that desire in proportion to one's qualification. If a man wants to be a high court judge, he must acquire not only the necessary qualifications, but also the consent of the authority who can award the title of high court judge. The qualifications in themselves are insufficient for one to occupy the post. It must be awarded by some superior authority. Similarly, the Lord awards enjoyment to living entities in proportion to their qualifications. But good qualifications in themselves are not sufficient to enable one to receive awards. The mercy of the Lord is also required.
Thank you. So it is not just the qualification. The Lord has actually, he has to sanction this, and only then the living entity will get the result. And Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the high court judge. Even he has... You have a question.
On the previous point, what is the difference between the deism and the Buddhism? Because it seems that it has some of the same parts.
There will be some overlapping. Deism and dualism. Just one more. Deism emphasizes more the transcendental, absolute transcendental nature of God, that he cannot actually interfere here. And the other one takes, but it's not necessarily that this world is bad.
But did he create this world?
Well, we have difference. Some would say that he created the world, then he kind of...
example of a clock engineer. He creates a clock and just the clock goes on itself.
Yeah. He created the universe, then he created the laws, then he removes himself and he doesn't interact anymore with this universe. So some people will say like this. There are many Christian-based. They call them heresies from the like Manichae and so many of them. They appeared in the beginning when it was not clear what is the mainstream Christianity. So there are many theories like this. Some would say that he didn't create the world. The world was created by someone else, the Satan. And
that's dualism, right?
It's also dualism, and it's also deism. These are just, you see, these are ways of thinking, and you can have one philosophy that contains all of them, actually. In a certain way. Or you can have just one of them in a pure form. So we were talking about... Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the high court judge, that he might have the qualification, he might have finished the law school with high marks, but still, in order to become high court judge, he needs the sanction of the authority, of higher authority. Only then he can become and do this job. And we see in Bhagavatam, Yudhishthira Maharaj says the same thing. When Arjuna comes back from Dwaraka, and he brings the news that Krishna left this planet, and then Yudhishthira Maharaj says, We got so much success and happiness in this life only because of Krishna. Only Krishna gave us all these facilities. Not because I was very qualified. Not because I'm a son of Dharma and I don't have enemies, and etc. And Arjuna also says the same thing. He says, because you know the story how he tried to protect the queens of Dwaraka and he couldn't. Although he was attacked by some ordinary persons. They were not even kshatriyas. He couldn't protect them. Of course, we know they were not ordinary persons. The whole thing was a pastime. But still, the point is that he was able to defeat so many kshatriyas, even he fought with Shiva, and then he was not able to defeat these people. And Arjuna himself explains that this is because Krishna is not here anymore. So everything was Krishna's mercy, although they were so qualified. So this point is made so strong by the Acharyas, because if you don't understand this point, then there is a danger that we actually go into a different type of philosophy, which is called Karma Mimamsa philosophy. It's one of the six Vedic philosophies. And according to this philosophy, the living entity performs his duty according to Shastra. He performs, let's say, a sacrifice or yagya or austerity, whatever it is, and then he is getting automatically the result of this action. He'll just get it. And it's a mechanical process. There is no God included in this. If he's included, he's just obliged by the ritual. If you perform it properly, he's obliged to give you the result. He's not actually independent. He's dependent on your... He's actually dependent on you. He's just giving you the result. What they miss is that you can have the money and you can go to the shop, to the proper shop, and you want to buy something. But still the shopkeeper, he can decide that he doesn't want to sell this item to you. He might say, this is a very rare item and I'm keeping this for my friend and I'm not selling this to you. That's all. So Krishna is always independent, and this is one of the first things we learn from Bhagavatam. He's Svarat. He's independent, supremely independent. And although we might have all the good qualities, it's still up to him to decide about if he's going to give the result or not. So if we don't understand this, then the driving force of our action will be I do the activity and I get the result for me, rather than being I'm doing the activity because I want to develop a relationship with Krishna. And then we'll get all these questions. I'm going for Mangal Arati, I'm chanting my rounds, why this happens to me? That means we are taking the process of Krishna consciousness, of devotional service, as just a pious activity, and we want the result. We don't take it as a way to develop relationships with Krishna. Because whatever happens in our life, it might be that Krishna is giving this thing to us just to enhance our relationship. But we don't take this, we don't think in this way, we just want the result. I did this, I want this result. So that's why this is very practical, to understand this. Why we're not Karma Mimamsakas, we are Vedantists. We belong to different school. We accept Krishna's supremacy. Some years back here in Mayapur, there was an announcement. There was some Ekadashi that the devotees wanted to follow, and they wrote an announcement: everybody please come in the temple in the evening. We're going to have a bhajan the whole night. We are not going to sleep. We are going to fast completely. And the result of this will go for, I don't remember exactly, there was some devotee or there was some project the devotees had, and the result is going for this. And Bhakti Vikash Maharaj, he was giving at that time seminar on nectar of instructions in the temple, and he noticed this, and he mentioned that actually this is an example of Karma Mimamsa mentality, that you want to do something and the activity is not even done yet, but you're already sure that there will be a result. And then not only this, but you already manage the result. The result should go somewhere in this place, you know. So Krishna is not at all included. Although apparently, superficially, you do this for his pleasure, but somehow he's not actually part of the picture. You do something, you're sure you'll get the result, and the result should go there. That means I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. So Maharaj mentioned that this is subtle difference in the mentality, and the devotee should be he can do all these things, but with slightly different mood. He should actually pray that if this is your desire, Krishna, then please, we want to please you by this, and then if this is your desire, it's possible, we pray also for the benefit of this and this. Yes?
Would it be correct to say, therefore, that in developing relationship with Vaishnavas, with other devotees, then is a stepping stone to cultivate that mood of relationship with Krishna instead of like order supplier?
Yeah. Sotra Maharaj used to say that the criteria, are we going back home to Godhead at the end of this life, is what are our relationships with the devotees right now. So if we have spiritual relationships strong based on service of Krishna, then you're going back home to Godhead, because there you're going to do the same things like you're doing here. The word yataha shows that the Lord rewards the living entity with the results of their desire without interfering with their free will. Therefore, one should be very careful about the quality of his desires. Srila Prabhupada comments. You want to read the comment?
Ordinarily, the living being does not know what to ask from the Lord, nor which hope. Being comes to know his constitutional position, however, he asks to be accepted into the Transcendental Association of the Lord in order to render transcendental loving service unto him. Unfortunately, living beings under the influence of material nature ask for so for many other things, and they are described in Bhagavad Gita 2.41 as having divided or splayed intelligence. Spiritual intelligence is one, but mundane intelligence is diverse.
Thank you. So we already established that we need not only to be qualified, but we need the mercy of Krishna to attain our goal. And Krishna will give this mercy if he is pleased. And he is pleased by the mood, by the motive in which we perform our devotional service. So if we have the proper motive, then we'll ask only the right thing from him. We won't ask for material facilities, because the material facilities are coming anyway. Krishna used to maintain us before we were devotees, so this is not something special. Why not maintaining us now when we are already devotees? So instead of asking for this, we should ask for to re-establish our position as his eternal servants in the spiritual world. And then he'll be very happy to reciprocate. The mantra 6 and 8, in mantra 6 and 7, the Lord is the greatest of all, and the individual souls are dependent on him. He purifies even most contaminated objects, and at the same time he remains absolutely pure. Krishna purifies everything. That means whatever it is, if it is connected to him, it will become purified. Even if it's a very selfish material desire, if it's connected to him, Krishna will purify it. But the thing is that we shouldn't stay at this stage. Relationship with Krishna, and any kind of relationship, it means it should be dynamic. It should move forward. We should always try to improve the quality of what is offered to the Lord. Like between husband and wife, or between friends, you did something last month and it was good and it was appreciated, but you cannot expect that the other party will remain happy with you for the rest of your life just because you did something yesterday. There should be always endeavor to serve and to improve the quality of the service. And this way the relationship will be dynamic and it will move forward. Otherwise it will become static and it will deteriorate gradually. In mantras 6 and 7 it is said that if one sees all living entities as parts and parcels of the Lord, he will not feel anxiety and will never hate anything and anybody. In the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna fails to apply this understanding in the situation he faces. He's standing in the front of the Kaurava army, where he sees many of his relatives, well-wishers and friends. Arjuna does not think of them as spiritual souls, but rather as his kinsmen. And the very thought of fighting with them renders him dejected and depressed. Arjuna gives different reasons why he does not want to fight, but the simple fact is that he is attached to his family members. He had killed many men before, and if he were to fight with enemies not related to his false ego, he would slay them without regret. But because he is facing killing the very persons which provide for his sense gratification, he hesitates. Thus, by the will of Krishna, Arjuna fails into illusion and refuses to fight because of family attachment. Illusion and depression are some of the results of not following the Ishavasya principle described in Ishupanishad. So if we see everything in connection to Krishna, in other words, if you understand this principle and follow it, then there will be no anxiety and hate. So hate comes when we are frustrated in our attachments. We want to attain something and we don't get it. This is described in a famous verse in Gita. Dhyato vishantam sangasteshu pachayate. First we contemplate the senses, the sense objects, then we develop attachment, and then this attachment develops into lust. And then when the lust is frustrated, which inevitably happens in the material world, then this gives rise to anger or hate. We want to destroy the obstacle of our attachment, of our enjoyment. And anxiety, hate and anxiety. Anxiety means lack of security, insecurity, because we see that there is something wrong in our field of activities, and we see that because of this reason, we won't be able to get what we want from this field. And then this brings anxiety. And similar thing is described in Bhagavatam, fear. Why fear arises? Why the conditioned souls are fearful? Bhagavatam says that it is because of the perverted memory. We see different interests. Okay, we see that our interest is different from Krishna's interest, and then this gives rise to fear, because we know that we won't be able to attain our goal in life. Deeply inside, we know that we'll be baffled in our attempts, and this makes us fearful and dejected. So we see this in Arjuna. In Gita, he hates the battle. He hates the idea that he has to go to this war, and he says this directly in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. In the beginning, Arjuna tells Krishna, why do you want me to engage in this ghastly warfare? So Krishna is giving devotional service to Arjuna. This is your service to fight. And Arjuna is telling him, why do you give me this ghastly service? This ghastly devotional service. I don't want this. I hate this. Why? Because it will be impediment to my sanctification. And anxiety. Also, Arjuna is very much anxious in anxiety, because he thinks that if he fights, his life will be finished. It's like committing suicide. All his family members will be dead and he cannot enjoy anymore. So the same thing. Hate and anxiety. And how do we get from this situation of hate, anxiety, bewilderment, how do we get to the position of Ishavasya principle? The Ishavasya consciousness of Naishkara. So Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he tells Arjuna that you should perform your duty, you should fight. And Prabhupada says that unless we follow our duties, then we cannot arise to the platform of Naishkarma. It's only possible if you perform your duties according to the Vedas. Then only you can attain this level of consciousness. And Gita and Ishupanishad, they say the same thing, but they start from different levels. So Ishupanishad starts from directly from the level of Naishkarmic, because it is understood, it is assumed that someone has followed, he was a brahmachari, then he was grihastha, then he became vanaprastha, then and he learned this, how to act in this spirit of Naishkarmic. And then Ishupanishad starts from there. First mantra describes the Ishavasya principle, which is the same as Naishkarma. But Bhagavad Gita starts a little lower because of the situation of Arjuna, and then the first thing Krishna explains is that you have to follow the duty of a kshatriya. And then he gradually explains higher and higher principles. In the second chapter, he explains that there is such thing as spiritual soul, there is spiritual reality. Then in the third chapter, he explains karma. Then fourth chapter, jnana. And then in fifth chapter, he combines karma and jnana. And he explains the buddhi yoga or karma yoga. But this is the same, again, the same idea. So if there is this understanding of Ishavasya, that everything belongs to Krishna and is for his pleasure and is connected to him, then Arjuna's illusion and limitation will be destroyed. This is what happens at the end. Yes.
Can I present a doubt?
Yes, sure.
How one can say that he follows Ishavasya, although not following duties which are prescribed to him by Vedas, like just goes to, he has a job. And he just does things according to dominant culture, but for Krishna.
Then how then it is not described in the Veda? If he follows his duty.
I mean, he's just living his normal karmi life, but for Krishna.
Well, how do you define normal karmi life? I mean, you're talking about someone who is just a pretender, or you're talking about devotee?
No, I'm just
okay, but what is karmic life?
Non-regulated life.
Not following principles.
I mean, the idea of living non-regulated life, or maybe regulated by not Vedas, and trying to apply Ishavasya there.
Okay. There will be some benefit because why he wants to apply this principle of Ishavasya? Because he has some faith in Krishna, let's say. But it will be more difficult because following the Vedic culture and paradigm is the most convenient way for the devotees to advance. So it will be more difficult for him. It will take more time. But if he is connected with Krishna, gradually he will be purified, and then he will start following. He will understand what is the value of following the Vedic principles. He will see that it's more convenient for me. If I want to attain my goal, then this is the easiest way. And I'm just wasting time and making trouble to myself by not following this. Gradually he will become purified.
The realization is more shallow because you cannot see how you are related to Krishna.
Yeah. Yes, and you cannot apply this. You don't see how Vedic culture can be applied in your life because you're caught up in the details and you don't see the principles. And the principles can be applied everywhere. The details might be different, but the principles you can apply without fail. Yes? Is it good? Laura, go faster.
The Ishavasya principle means connecting everything to Krishna.
Yes, means to understand that Krishna is the proprietor of everything, that he is the controller of everything, he is the enjoyer, he is the supreme enjoyer. And we are his energy also. The facilities that are given to us to act, like our body, our mind, our intelligence, our abilities, and the external material energy that we use, everything is given by him, and it should be used for him, for his pleasure. All this. And we have a lot of kota, which is, as human beings, the most important aspect of this a lot of kota is to ask, to inquire about absolute truth and render service. Something like this. Okay. Is that okay? I'll end up here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shiva Prabhupada ki jai.